Hi, everyone. I'm Hillary Kerr, and this is Life Lessons, a podcast spotlighting women who have incredible careers within a single field or industry. We talk about everything from how they got their start to the best things they've learned along the way. Today, I am so thrilled to have some time with a woman everyone is obsessed with because she's one of the most brilliant humans in the entertainment industry. Showrunner, producer, writer, director, Jenny Connor. Jenny is truly a force of nature and has worked on and created incredible shows over the years, starting with Undeclared, where she was a writer and story editor, and then on to the cultural juggernaut that is Girls, which she executive produced, wrote, directed, and of course, was the showrunner for as well. She's also just a delightful person, very much girl crush material for everyone who knows her or even has just watched her work from afar. But I'll let you decide that for yourself. Now, on Life Lessons, it's Jenny Connor. Jenny, we like to start at the beginning on this podcast. So what did you study in school and what did you think you were going to be when you grew up?
I went to Sarah Lawrence, so there were no majors.
No majors. No. I actually think that's kind of brilliant.
Yeah, totally. It's just hard to answer questions after college forever. Like, how much of an asshole do you sound like when you're like, there are no majors? And people are still talking about majors.
What was your plan then for post-college life?
I didn't have an extreme plan. I thought I wanted to go into entertainment. And my parents were in entertainment. They're writers, movies, but also like a lot of 80s television shows, Cagney and Lacey, and my dad wrote for The Sopranos and all of that. So it seemed, I mean, that's, if you grew up in LA, that's, it's a company town, and it made sense to me. And I was a runner on the Emmys.
What's a runner?
It's like, I don't even know if they have them anymore, but I'll tell you why. Because at the time, this was the 43rd annual Emmy Awards, and it was like Jamie Curtis, Jerry Seinfeld, and Gary Shandling.
Wow.
But that's how long ago it was. But what would happen was every time they were like making any kind of shorts or any kind of welcome to the Emmys or the categories, they would have to send them these huge tapes to a post house because they didn't have editing. So I was mostly driving back and forth.
As a runner, yeah. You literally were running
tape. I was running, yeah.
Back and forth.
And I was terrible at it. Like, in that I'm the slowest driver in Los Angeles. I'm not kidding. I think I was a must-hire. Looking back now that I've had some must-hires on my plate, I'm like, I had to have been a must-hire. Also, because I was terrible. Like, they should have fired me just because it took me so long.
Got it.
And, like, I remember stopping for coffee. Like, what an entitled asshole.
But, you know, we all learn.
Yes.
So there were a few years between graduating and your first writing job. So I read that you worked for Tribeca Productions.
I did. I worked for Jane Rosenthal. I didn't work directly under her. I was an assistant for the Book Scout at the time, Matthew Spector. Mm-hmm. And then I left with him to become a creative executive at Jersey Films, which was made Pulp Fiction and others. So I was also kind of a terrible book scout, to be honest. And
what
then I went
mean,
back.
Being
well,
a book scout?
In New York, because there's such a big publisher, because publishing is there, you have people who are just trying to get books early, getting them out of the publishing, and reading them and trying to make an offer before Scott Rudin does is essentially what that job is. And so I was doing that for a while, and I was good at it. But the part I wasn't good at was I would, like, take writers out to lunch and just be like, so tell me what you do all day, rather than actually trying to develop something with anyone. And then from there, I went back to Tribeca, and Jane hired me as a creative executive. So,
and what did that entail?
Well, a lot of book scouting, but a lot of also developing, giving notes on scripts, things like that. And I think I was okay at that. Jane still likes me, so
that's a good sign.
That seems like it's a good sign. And I learned a lot there. We would meet with writers all the time, so I learned sort of what they act like in meetings.
That is a good way to model.
It really is.
When you're giving notes on a script, when a script is in development and you're fresh out of college,
what kind of notes would you give? And how did you feel comfortable doing that?
I did not. I never felt comfortable once. I never felt comfortable doing it. I always felt every day like I was messing up. But you just do the best you can, and you learn a lot from the people above you. And I think at that time I was showing my notes to my friend Jane Gehring. We were assistants at the same time, and she remains a very close friend. And she, very smart, very on top of things. We were total opposites. Like, I was Sarah Lawrence, like, all black clothes and Doc Martens, and she was like Greenwich. And it was, I thought, oh, I'll never like her. And then we started agreeing in all the staff meetings on creative ideas. And it's like, oh, I guess we're going to be friends. So I think we would help each other to make sure we didn't sound stupid. And, you know, if you're interested in writing, and I read a lot. And so, I mean, that just helps you with story. But if I look back and look at my notes, I'm sure I would be mortified, just mortified.
Well, I do think it's also an interesting process, because I remember when I started my career at Elle, we would have these big editorial meetings and you would pitch ideas. And it took me a long time to get comfortable with, I would have all these ideas, but I didn't know they were good ideas yet. And I was too nervous to say them. Right. So how do you, like, what was some of the feedback that you would get that sort of solidified that you had a point of view worth sharing?
Well, I want to go back to what you said, because I think we've both been the people who don't say the things we necessarily think. And I think at that time in our career, it's probably correct. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I was 23. What did I know?
Like, exactly. And you may have thought of the exact same idea 2 weeks before, but, you know, sometimes you don't know what's a good idea, as you said. So I do think there's a certain level of, let's be quiet till we learn. Maybe hold it till you're sure it's a good idea. I mean, I don't want to discourage people, but the best staff writers are people who listen the most and throw in a joke when they know it's going to kill, and not necessarily, you know, sort of cloud up the room with a million pitches.
That's interesting. So it's like being able to filter some of that.
Yeah. And you get better at that.
So I also, you do. It's like a muscle.
Yeah.
So I also read that at some point you were New York City's most in-demand temp.
Oh, yes.
And that you worked at Chanel. So tell me that story.
Well, worked at Chanel. I was trying to write, and I realized at a certain point that it was very, very hard to do both. Because, I mean, a lot of people can do that. They can get up in the morning at 4 a.m. and write and then do another job. For me, it felt like the same muscle. So I was hardly, like, creatively inspired when I got home. So John Hamburg, who's a terrific writer and director, so funny, who I met because I became obsessed with his short that had gone to Sundance, and we became friends, and I would take him out to lunch. And he said to me at a certain point, Connor, you got to quit. Quit and do something else. So I did. And I became a very valuable temp. Also because I had sort of been trained in Hollywood. So I remember I was a temp once for the vice president of the New York Stock Exchange, and he was going to Martha's Vineyard, and I was like, I'll plan that trip. And I planned the fuck out of that trip, because in Hollywood you do. And I, you know, sent him lists of flights, and I got him, you know, a charter and all of that. And he was like, oh, my God, and basically offered me a job there, which paid a lot at the time. And I was like, I can't work at the New York Stock Exchange. And then I temped at Chanel, which was very exciting and very intimidating. Trying to figure out what to wear as a temp at Chanel is rough.
What kind of jobs were you doing there?
I worked for the head of publicity. And I remember, so Chanel has this very famous sale once a year, which is for its employees. And everything is dirt cheap for Chanel. And they let me go. And I was like, oh, my God, this is the most exciting thing. And then I saw the prices and I was like, this is a full day of temping. I can't afford any of this. So I wound up getting Chanel flip-flops.
Hey.
And
everyone remembers their first Chanel.
They were all nice to me. It was a little, you know, publicisty and scary.
Yeah.
But the woman was French and lovely. And it was all of those places. I love being places where I have no reference for.
So you're temping and then you're writing on the side.
Yes.
And at that point, did you have a writing partner?
I did. I was writing partners with Allie Rushfield, who's the best. She just worked on Love, and now she's the showrunner of Shrill. We were best friends in like seventh grade, and were writing partners for a really long time.
So how does that relationship work, like, with a writing partner? Because obviously Catherine and I are business partners. We have, I always say, like, the Venn diagram of our skill set has very little overlap. But I feel like you have to be a little bit more meshed when you have a writing partner. But maybe that's wrong.
Well, I don't know how everyone does it, but we thought the same things were funny, but we had very different senses of humor.
Oh, okay.
She's much, like, edgy is the wrong word because that sounds dark. It's not dark. She's, like, more surreal than me or something, and it brought so much to our work, and she sees a joke from a different point of view. And when we wrote together, we would basically—
What was the day like?
Yeah.
You're like, okay, we're going to be writing partners. Are you writing spec scripts? Or what are you doing?
The first thing we did was write a script, spec script. And
can you explain what a spec script is for our audience?
That's a script that no one asked you or paid for you to write. So you write it hoping it will sell. But for us, it just got us a lot of attention and a lot of, like, meetings, but we didn't sell it.
So it's just an original.
Yes.
So you basically, like, created your own TV show in one script.
It actually was features.
Okay,
we did features for a long time. So
film.
Yes, film. What we basically did was we would sit in a room and outline what we were going to do and just say, I'll take this scene, you take this scene, and then we'd swap. And so everyone had a filter of everything. Lena and I used to do that, too, when we were writing together.
Got it.
Which we didn't always, but when we did, that was the process.
So do you like that process of having someone else to bounce off of? Or is it difficult because, I mean, especially when you were first starting out, people can be very delicate about their work. Not everyone is.
Yeah.
You can go through a mood where you're not feeling great about things and then be very sensitive. I know that having been in the editing process my entire career, it can be – I've had friends who – edited me at Elle, and it was great. And then other times it was really hard for my ego. So how did you navigate that?
I mean, I would say with Allie, we just grew up together, so we had a shorthand already. And then with Lena, I was very lucky because she has a very, very clear vision, but she's also really collaborative. That I think there are a lot of people in her position who wouldn't have been so open to Judd and I making notes or going in a different direction. But she, like, an example is on the pilot, Judd was the one who said, you need something to start up the story. What if her parents cut her off? And, you know, not everyone with that kind of clear vision would have taken someone else's idea, but she was really generous that way.
Okay, cool. So you guys are in a room, you're writing spec scripts,
yeah.
And then what happened?
And then we sent it to an agent, and the agent, at this time, let me be clear, and this goes up and down in history, but at this time, it was like spec scripts were like the hot shit thing you did because they would sell for a million. I mean, it's a lottery, of course, but it was a big moment in spec scripts, so everyone was doing it, I think.
Uh-huh.
So we sent it to an agent, and I knew agents because I had worked at Tribeca, so I was very lucky. And they sent it around, and it didn't sell. It almost sold, but it didn't sell, and we got a ton of meetings from it. So then we would just go on rounds and rounds and rounds of meetings. And our first job, oddly, was adapting a photo book. It was Lauren Greenfield's first book.
Yeah.
Called Fast Forward. And Sony hired us, and we wrote and wrote. And I mean, I think we wrote 25 drafts of that with the producers before we ever turned it in because we had to learn to write.
I was going to say, how were you figuring that out, and what was that process like?
We had very hands-on producers, the Ufflins, and they wouldn't let us do anything without really thinking about it. And at the time, the process was a little torturous. But I look back on it, and I'm like, oh, it's like the way I learned to write TV with Judd.
Just through sheer force of doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it?
Yep. Drafts are the most important thing in writing.
Really?
Sorry, I said that, like, with such authority. To me, drafts are the most important part in writing.
Well, this is your opinion,
yes.
So you should say you think with that authority. So, and then at what point did you start working on Undeclared? Because you were a writer and story editor on that project, right?
Right. So story editor is another name for writer. So there's all these different levels of television writers. Staff writer's the first one, story editor's the second, and then you go into co-producer and then produce. I might be getting this wrong. It's been so long. But and then co-executive producer and then executive producer. All of those jobs are writing.
You're kidding
me. No, it's just different levels. So when you're watching, you know, I don't know, Shrill, and you see Ali Rushfield as the executive producer, she's the showrunner.
Why is it so confusing?
I don't know. It's very stupid.
Very opaque.
Yes.
Anyway, so how did you get that job and why did you decide to take that versus working on your own?
Well, so Ali and I, we were doing rewrites and adaptations. Nothing ever got made, but we were getting paid to do our job and we could support ourselves.
Let's talk about that for a second. So I think that's something that people don't know is like, yes, you can go to IMDb and look at someone's list of work, but they've also worked on a million other things that never necessarily got made. Like, you can meet someone in this town who's a millionaire who has no credits.
I know. Sometimes you go to people's houses and you're like, wow.
And they are successful.
Very
enough,
successful, yeah.
But then also generally tend to have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder
about it. Well,
I
think it's hard. It was hard for us. It started to feel like, you know, you're on a treadmill or something.
And like you're good enough, but not enough to get something made, essentially,
absolutely,
right?
But, you know, it's not—
But it's not really your fault.
It's, well, it can be, but it's always like there's so many factors that go into making a movie. So that's why we really like TV. And what happened was Judd had made Freaks and Geeks, and we were obsessed with it. Like, when they canceled it, we used to talk about going to NBC and chaining ourselves to their gates. And it was just such an incredible show and touched us so much. So when we heard he was doing another show, we immediately were like, please, please, please. And so—
Was that the first time you had approached someone about wanting to be a part of their team? And was this also
definitely
the first time you had been interested in doing TV?
Listen, I've always been a big TV watcher. And we had talked about it with our agent. So we went to meet with him, and we just said we're huge fans of TV, and we just need to start thinking about TV.
Because this is before TV was cool.
Yes. And so
Judd was working on this new project.
Yeah, and he was meeting people. So we went in and met with him.
So are you in L.A. at this point then?
Oh, definitely. At a certain point after the Tempe, and I don't remember what year this was, my husband at the time, Ben Cooley, he got into business school in Chicago. So we moved into business school, and I flew back and forth a lot to L.A. to write with Ali. And then at the end of it, we moved to L.A. That was sort of our deal.
So you're in L.A. You want to go work on Undeclared. How did you – did you have to write a script for that? How did that process work?
No,
how did
we
you get
had
hired?
A couple of TV specs, which means something totally different.
Tell me.
Because what it generally means – and this is actually very out of fashion now. But what it used to mean is I'm going to write a sample office, or I'm going to write a sample Sex in the City. So – and that was how – people determined whether you should be hired. Now, as a showrunner, I very much like to read original content. That's
why?
Because it just shows more of who the writer is. Like, if they don't have a framework to start from, there's more imagination in it.
Interesting.
But also, for example, if you write an office spec, the office can't read it. So you're writing an office spec to get on Modern Family because legally, you can't read a spec about your own show because you could just steal it or steal the idea.
That's so weird, though.
I know. That's why also I prefer original material, because I don't know if your office could translate to Modern Family. It's really strange. So they had sent Judd our Sex in the City or something.
So you had written an episode of Sex in the City.
Yes.
For Undeclared.
Yes. And we sat down with him and Paul Feig, who was then was going to run it at the time, but then he, I think his pilot got picked up or something. And first I sat down alone with Judd because Ali was out of town. And it was like an okay meeting. Mm-hmm. It wasn't great. And then we all sat down together and it was super fun and great.
So are you good in a room?
I am now, and I might not have been then. Or it was just a weird, I mean, you know, you never know.
What do you think has changed?
Oh, just like learning how to be in a room.
Can we talk about that for a
minute? Sure.
So when I say, are you good in a room, I'm talking about, you know, when you're going in to meet with someone and you have to be creative and you have to be on and you have to vibe with that person, it really, it's kind of like a date in some ways,
definitely.
Right?
Yes. We just met with this company yesterday and I was like, this is the best first date.
And did you understand what you needed to bring emotionally or energy-wise to those meetings? And like, how would you prepare for them?
Well, I think organically, you have it too, Hillary. Like,
I like people.
Yeah, you like people. You're good in a room. Mm-hmm. So some of that is just the way you grow up and the friends you have and the experiences you've had. But I would say, first of all, you do anything enough and you get better. But the ways in which it changed was sort of understanding what people might want from that meeting. So when I go in, I wouldn't say it was targeted, but I knew more about how to talk to people. So I think I could charm you before, but, you know, if I want to sell you on something, I have to be a salesman.
Got it. Okay. So you had this second great meeting,
yes.
And you guys, I assume, were hired.
We were hired, and the staff of Undeclared was me and Allie, Seth Rogen, maybe you've heard of him,
mm-hmm.
Nick Stoller, who is a writer-director. He made Get Him to the Greek and Neighbors.
So not funny.
Not funny at all.
In the slightest.
Not one of the funniest people I've ever met, ever. Lou Morton, who's an EP on Veep. Rodney Rothman, who just won an Oscar for the Spider-Man movie. So it was like a pretty great room.
That's a good pledge class.
It really was. And Judd runs the system on a real meritocracy. He doesn't care what your level is. He doesn't care how old you are. Seth was 18. If he thinks you're funny and he thinks you're talented, you really rise up. And that's how Seth sort of became Seth, because mm-hmm. he wrote, I want to say, like 5 scripts that year. So we all got a really big chance to do everything. And it's very unusual to be in the writer's room, on set for your episode, in editing, in casting, as a staff writer. It's basically unheard of.
Well, also, Busy Phillips has sat down with me before, and she talks about working with him and about how he wants input from the actors. And it seems like she said it's just not the experience that she normally has had in this industry. So it sounds like he's a really interesting role model in how he operates his business.
Absolutely. He's incredibly collaborative. He loves improvisation. He loves going into people's real life to get their stories and find them.
So what did you take away from that you use today, and what didn't work for you as well?
Okay, so it's funny that you mentioned Busy, because I think we have the same experience, which is our big break was Judd's shows. And the problem is that you think all
That's
shows.
How it is.
Yes. And then you go on to staff on other shows and you're like, oh, no, this is a nightmare. And so the thing I learned the most was teaching people while you're working with them. It's so valuable. If you have a show that's working and on for a long time, your writers rise up and you train them to do your job, which is fantastic. So that's a big thing I learned from him, is to, you know, try to mentor people while they're working for you and explain to them why they're doing this and show them what editing looks like and bring them into casting if it's their episode. Things like that really help grow someone into a writer. Also, because right now there's so much TV that people tend to jump levels every year. But now there's like 8 episodes of television, right? So they do 8 episodes of television and they'll take a jump, and not everyone's ready because not everyone's teaching them how to do it. And there are a lot of inexperienced showrunners, which is fine, great, like good for everybody, God bless. But it can hurt the creator when that happens.
What about that process was not something that you decided to take forward? Because not someone can have a perfectly well-functioning, high-functioning environment, but that's not necessarily your takeaway or something that you want to emulate.
I mean, you know, that was one of those rooms that we were the only women in, which was very, very common at the time and often the same way now. And so I think one of the things I've taken away is to diversify a room. I think that's really, really valuable.
Absolutely. So what was your trajectory like after that? And do you think that was a pretty standard trajectory, especially as compared to now, where people are moving at different paces for better and worse?
I mean, there are people who make their whole life staffing and they have a lot of money because shows go into reruns and they're amazing support systems for people, and that's one way to go. And then another way to go is, well, I'll tell you how it happened, which was Undeclared was heaven. Then the next room we went into was pure hell. And then the next room we went into was pure hell. Like, I'm talking about, you know, all day, all night, which, by the way, when you're working on Will and Grace and you're working till midnight, God bless. But when you're working on a show you think is crappy, you didn't know it was crappy, but when you think it is and you're working till midnight or 2 a.m., it's really soul-sucking. So after those two experiences, Allie and I were like, maybe we should try to sell a pilot. So we sold a pilot to Fox and got to make it, which is very lucky, and it didn't get picked up. And then the next one we did get picked up, and that was Help Me Help You.
Starring Ted Danson.
And what I will say to you is we were totally ill-prepared to run a show.
So at that point, you were co-creators?
We were co-creators and showrunners. But when we were doing Help Me Help You, Robin Schwartz, who was the head of New Regency at the time, brought in Alex Reed, who was a very experienced television writer and producer. And we were lucky enough to work with him. Sometimes those people clash a lot, and it's egos and—
Because it's like, this is my show,
yeah.
But you're more experienced and you're under me, but you know more than I do.
Exactly. So the ones that work are the best.
So what was it like being in charge? Because you'd been in all of these rooms and you had been on staff and you had been part of the team, and then all of a sudden you're the man or the woman,
yes,
in this case. And did you like being in charge? Was it a steep,
yes,
learning curve?
It wasn't that steep of a learning curve. At that point, I had been on enough series that I knew what it was.
But and being a boss is still
different. It's true.
And managing people is different.
The way that I like to staff is to find people, this is in every area, who are really, really good at their jobs and let them do them.
So you're not a micromanager?
I am not at all. I'm whatever the opposite of that is.
Macromanager?
Is that what it is?
Let's make it so.
Okay. That's, I think, one of the ways I'm successful is that there's no power struggle. I don't need to see every detail of everything. I hire great people and trust them.
How do you know how to hire someone great?
Well, in terms of crew, I had two amazing producers, Eileen Landris and Gina Heyman, and they were both production-oriented. So they would hire the crew. And I always say when I'm asked if there's a difference between having a lot of women at the top, and I think that women crew up or hire their crew in an inherently female way. And what I mean is, and this is just my experience, but men tend to just try to get everyone great. And they taught me this, to get everyone great who gets along. And
so
make sure—
dinner party.
Dinner party, exactly. And I have to tell you, we had almost the exact same crew for all of the years of Girls. And they were like family by the end. And, like, you know, there's a thing in production where people go away and they all, like, fuck each other. And no one ever did that. Or maybe they did a little. But, like, it wasn't a huge thing at our show because by the end it was, like, brothers and sisters.
Got it. So you were good as a boss.
I think so.
From that jump. And you felt comfortable in that space.
I really did.
And you felt comfortable asking for what you needed and what you wanted.
Absolutely.
Were you good at negotiating for yourself?
I mean, I am a pretty tough negotiator. For myself, it's hard to say. It is for myself, but I've also had so much help with my agents and lawyers. But I think the secret to that, the times I've really succeeded have been, I've been willing to walk away.
How do you get in that headspace of being willing to walk away?
Well, sometimes you've been on a show and you're like, I could do something else, you know?
So just internal confidence.
Some of that is internal confidence. And some of it is like, I know my worth. And if I don't get my worth, I'm going to feel shitty, right? You know your value. So it's defined in numbers in these businesses. So figure out your number, ask for it, and really negotiate hard if you're willing to leave.
Did you also have a cushion? Like, were you good about saving? Were you good about – because I also think one of the scary things about your industry is – it feels lumpy.
Yeah, totally.
And when things are good, money's coming in,
yeah,
but there's no telling it's going to be picked up. There's a lot that's out of your control, and you can't plan for the financials in the way that you can in a more corporate or traditional career.
Well, or you could. When I got divorced, me and Ben, we had no money. So there was nothing to split, and we were young, and, you know, I walked away with nothing, basically, which he did too. You know, we were evenly broke. And I was just getting jobs after job, but they were small. Like, and weird. So Transformers was one, but also this Swedish show being adapted into an English show shot in Liverpool, and they needed someone to Americanize it. So I did that. And I would say I didn't have savings at that point, and it was really hard to start over, but I wasn't that fearful, and I don't know why, but I guess I always thought I could go staff on something else, which was not something I was particularly interested in doing, and only Tiny Furniture would have brought me to someone else's show, for real.
Tell me about script doctoring, because first of all, I love that. And at what point were you doing this in your career, and were you doing it all along, or is it something you would dip in and out of? How does anyone even come to you and say, and by the way, for people who don't know, script doctoring is like when you punch up a character or an act or something's not working on a show to what you were saying earlier.
Exactly.
Or
feature.
A feature film.
So Allie and I had broken up, and we were trying separately to figure out what to do. And I was trying to figure out even what I wanted to do. And I think, honestly, at this time, there were just not that many women doing comedy and doing punch-ups in the screenplay world. So what used to happen is they would have roundtables for movies, and that means they'd call in all different writers to read the script and just come up with a million jokes or a million changes of plot or a new set piece. A set piece, for example, in Ferris Bueller's is like the Sausage King.
Yes.
Right? That's a big set piece. So I would go to these roundtables and usually was the only woman or one of two. And I could stand up to the men in the room, not stand up to them, but be level with them or better sometimes. And I think people were really looking for not female-driven content at all, but someone to work on women's movies mm-hmm. and work on women's parts. So I got hired. That's how I got onto Transformers 3, because I had done a roundtable and I guess impressed them. And
so that's like a good way to keep sort of flexed and
yeah,
working.
Yeah, I don't even know how much they do it anymore, but it's really nice work if you can get it.
So then Girls happened.
So then Girls happened, and I met Lena sort of right in between that, because I remember talking to her on the phone from the Transformers lot. So UTA, which was our shared agency at the time, knew that I was obsessed with her movie because I kept having them make copies of it so that I could give it to people. And I didn't know her, and I didn't know there was a TV possibility or anything. I just was a super fan.
Of Tiny Furniture.
Of Tiny Furniture. Judd used to call me the unofficial distributor. So when she needed a supervisor, Lena told a blind script, which means they're going to pay you to write something, but you don't know what it is yet. But it's sort of to hold hot talent. And so Sue, who was running HBO, was like, Jenny Connor should be this person. And we met, Lena and I met, and we just really, really connected. And that was really it. And then a few weeks later, Judd called me and he was like, you want some help on your show? And I was like, yes, please. And so he came in, and then the show became a monster, you know. And Judd and I were the showrunners, and so we could help her with experience and also scripts and everything. And he was in LA a lot of the time, and it was great because he was like separated a little, so he was able to read scripts with complete perspective and edit with complete perspective and help us choose music with your husband, Jonathan Leahy.
Yes, yes, yes.
So I think that together we made a very good team. We do that well together.
Did you know what you were making? Did you know it was going to be the thing that it became?
Oh, my God, no. I thought it was going to be well-reviewed because I really liked it. But I thought it was going to be like the size of Tiny Furniture, which is like a very small amount of the population likes it. I did not know we would be the lightning rod that we were.
What kind of pressure did you feel from some of that attention? Because the show captivated the world. This was a female-driven,
yes.
female-created show about young women, which is not a topic like, yes, the Mad Men's and yes, the Game of Thrones. But this was not an obvious lightning rod,
That's
necessarily.
True. That's true. We had no idea. I mean, zero idea. And once it became that, and we were still making the show, we realized we had a lot of feedback.
Did you pay attention to that?
Some of it.
Especially in the beginning?
Especially in the beginning. Not like, you know, she shouldn't be naked, but like there should be more diversity. We absolutely listened to that. I think once we got through second season, we really stopped listening because there was no point. And it was more and more divisive as we went on. So that was another thing that was interesting about it. And by the way, that works for people watching a show, the divisiveness. But once it got to be all noise because everyone was saying, I hate it, I love it, we sort of had to check out. And I remember Judd saying really early on, and this is more to Lena for Celebrity, but he was like, don't get a Google check. Like, just let go. Don't check the internet. Don't read Twitter. Just make your show.
So looking back on that show, what do you think you did really well? And what do you think you could have done differently? Or what would you have liked to have done differently?
I mean, the thing I'd like to do differently that I don't think necessarily counts as a mistake is I wish I had directed much more.
Right, because you did a couple of episodes, right?
I did.
And including the finale.
The finale, which was fun, and the finale, the end of the last season before it.
Were those the first two times you directed?
Yeah.
Why didn't you start that earlier?
I will tell you. So television is very much a writer's medium, much more than the director. Our directors come in as guests. They rotate in and out. We're the voice of the show. So I always thought I was doing all the things I wanted to do without having to go on a tech scout. I was talking to the actors and giving them notes all the time and adjusting them. I was working with directors really closely. I was writing the show. I was like, I don't know that I need to do anything more. And then, I'm not kidding you, I think fourth season or fifth season, probably fourth, I was sitting on the set with Colin Quinn. And he said, why haven't you directed? And I told him my reasons. And he said, that's crazy. You're never going to have a better place to learn how to direct. You got to do it. You got to do it here. These people are your family. And I was like, huh, okay, great. Thank you. So I...
Did you propose yourself?
Oh, yeah. But like it was sort of implicit by that point. I think the first season wouldn't have worked and the second season. But by that point, the crew almost could have done it on their own. So I was very helped along the way and nurtured. And when I did it, I started to realize, oh, tech scout's fun if you're running it. And, oh, I like this part of directing. And editing's really different when you've directed it. So I actually fell in love with it.
Did you prepare for it in a
specific
way? Yes, a lot. Way?
A lot, because I really didn't want – I'm still terrified of directing every minute of every day. I really didn't want to look like an asshole in front of my crew. And so I really prepared. I had drawings and shot lists, and I was really ready to go.
How did you know how to have all of that?
Well, I'd seen – you know, I sat at the side of Richard Shepard, who I live with, and I sat at the side of Jesse Peretz and other amazing people, and I learned from them, watching them.
So you basically had this masterclass.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that first day directing, did everything go the way you thought it would? And also, has this changed your perspective on working with directors? Do you think that you understand their process more?
Yeah, I think it always helps. I think it always helps to do someone else's job and see what it feels like.
Is it something you want to do more of?
Directing?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But I think I want to direct my own stuff. But I'm not sure. We'll see. I'm kind of on the fence because it is still very terrifying to me.
Okay. That's reasonable and fair.
Yeah.
So, as we said, you were on the finale, which you directed. You also wrote it or co-wrote it.
Yeah, I think the three of us wrote it.
So
can't remember.
So, what's it like to, were you ready to be done?
We were ready to be done. For sure. And
you just
we
felt
picked
like
the time.
You felt like you told all the story that you needed to tell.
Yeah, and we thought it was going to be five seasons. For some reason, that seemed really neat to us and tidy. And then Mike Lombardo and Casey Bloys were like, don't you want to do one more? And we were like, okay. But I think it wrapped it up. I mean, there's only so much you can do about a young woman stumbling through the world. Like, that loses its charm for sure when she's 30. We were ready, but we were ready intellectually, but it's a very strange thing to do. And I think I was processing it for a long time after that. it was just really weird to walk away from a job of 6 years that's so intense.
So were you worried about your next project? Because also, I think when you've been on something for so long, you're so immersed in it. Were you having other ideas for other shows? Were you thinking about camping already? Were you thinking about other new projects? Did you need to take some time to, like, recoup? And because I also think there's a part of creativity can go in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Sometimes doing one thing when you're already sort of like checked out to the next thing, you can start filling that well back up with interesting projects that you want to work on or things you want to do. Sometimes when you're just in it and giving it your all, then it's done and you're like, I don't have anything.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was like that for a while. And then Lena sent me the episodes of Camping that Zadie Smith had sent her. And I was like, this is what we should do. And I loved making Camping and it was great, but it did feel very fast by the time we were making it.
Like you wish you would have, it's like you got out of one relationship and then started dating
exactly.
someone right away.
It was, yes, I'm not going to say it was our rebound show because I really like it, but yeah, I think we could have slowed it a beat, but I think, at least for me, I can't speak for her, but I think I was afraid we were going to like lose the spirit and lose the momentum and
Got to strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah.
Got it. So what are some of those key skills when you look back on everything that you've done, everything in this industry and the fact that you've, you know, written so much and now directed and executive produced and showrunner and all of these different jobs? What are the skills that you think are the most important to really succeed in this industry?
I mean, the most important thing to me ever is just hardworking, because a lot of people say they're writers and they're not necessarily writing, or they've been working on a script for 2 years, which is amazing. But I think the whole thing of being a writer is that you write all the time. And by the way, I haven't written in months and months and months. It's not like I'm so inspired. But I do think if you're trying to come up as a writer, I think one of people's biggest mistakes is they get stuck on a script and they think it's perfect and they haven't rewritten it enough. But also, you know, you send a script out, it sells or it doesn't. And I always think you should let it go. I'm very much like, it's a Linda Opes thing too. Like next, next, next. Like we don't have to be disappointed forever that our show didn't get picked up. Just figure out what you're doing next. That's the way I work. It's not for everybody, of course. I mean, Matt Weiner classically, famously held onto a script for a really long time, and that became a tiny little show called Mad Men that no one watched. And so, you know, again, there are those examples, but I think they're fewer and farther between than the people who just let things go and move on.
So where do you get inspiration from?
All different places. I mean, I really like working with things that already exist. I like working with books and magazines.
So because it gives you a framework?
Yeah, there's a framework. There can be a voice, and also it's finding your own voice within someone else's voice, which is a really fun challenge. I think I remember I Loved You by Carolyn Kepnes when it first came out and was so into it, and I thought, there's no way they're going to make a TV show that captures this voice. And they did, and they expanded on it, and I loved you.
Same.
I mean, it's great.
Like I sat down with Shay not that long ago.
You did?
Yes. It's like, let's talk about Peach.
Yes. I mean, yeah, I think that's one way to go. But also, I mean, we're developing an idea at Netflix that was an idea my old manager and I had, like, pre-Girls. And I just brought it up in a meeting and, you know, the person decided they wanted to do it and we went to Netflix and
sold it. Well, timing's everything,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. But I truly believe, you know, this idea that the muse doesn't come unless you're working. There's nothing I believe, like, basically more than that in terms
really?
Of the writing process. Yes. I just think for me, if I'm sitting around, I'm just getting depressed and confused and spending too much time rearranging my closet. And I think when I'm working is when inspiration, even if I'm working on the shittiest thing I've ever written, that's when I get to think that I've, of the thing that I write that I like.
I love that. So thinking of the best lessons you've learned throughout your career, what are some of them? Like, what are the best things that you've learned in terms of life and work so far?
Well, this is, I think, this is a common expression, but I think it's so true. I have learned many times you can't go around it. You have to go through it. And I think for me, I wish you could go around it. I really do, but you can't. And I went through my divorce. And it was really hard for a while. And now Ben is one of my closest friends in the world. You know, I went through the breakup with Allie. A million things that happened that were so painful. And you think at the time, it's not going to get better. And everyone tells you it's going to get better. And you think they're liars and that they're just trying to humor you. And then it does. And when you do the work, the emotional work, not the writing work. My favorite quote in the world is from Mary J. Blige. And by the way, I saw her at the gym and almost collapsed because she said, "All we can do is grow." And I say it literally 1,000 times a day, as a joke, as serious. I mean it all the ways.
Got it. So last but not least,
yes.
If there's someone who wants to emulate your career, of which there are many people, what is the best advice that you could give them?
I think I would say just never stop writing, never stop working. And if you have another job, and again, this was hard for me, but if you have another job, write when you can. And just keep working and keep working, because the more you work, the more you can find your own voice.
I love that. I believe in the power of just doing it.
Yes. That
just
honestly, no other way works for
Stop
me.
Stop talking about
yes.
it and actually do it, because you might find out you don't actually want to do it.
That's
you just
right.
like the idea of it. And that's okay, too.
Yeah. Then you go on to your second life. Am I right?
That was showrunner, producer, writer, and director Jenny Connor. Stay tuned on Wednesdays for more life lessons with incredible women like Jenny. If you like today's show, as always, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, and please rate and review us. We always want to know who you'd like to hear from on the show, so send in your requests to hello@secondlifepod.com, or you can just DM me on Instagram. I'm @HillaryKerr, or you can DM the show @SecondLifePod. We always love hearing from you. I'm Hillary Kerr, and you've been listening to Life Lessons.